World Soccer Talk podcast, the only podcast that focuses on watching soccer on TV, online, and apps. In episode 124, we feature NBC's Premier League coverage breaks a new record, Univision and TNT break records too, this time for the Champions League, MLS makes an interesting deal to appeal to cord cutters, plus letters from you, the listeners, in our mailbag section. My name is Christopher Harris, and I'm joined by my co-host, Kartik Krishnayar. Kartik, so much to take in from this past week. Of course, it was Championship Sunday, which went according to plan for your Manchester City. But you had the Championship playoffs, the semi-finals, as well as, League One, League Two. Where do you want to start? There's so much to cover.
Yeah, I mean, there was just a lot of football on, and then obviously Bundesliga and Serie A winding down toward the end of their seasons, and the Eredivisie, by the way, on ESPN Plus, very tight league race between Ajax and PSV. Checked out some of that. Chris, I mean, if anything, this week just showed me how accessible ESPN Plus is making football for those of us here in the States, and that includes USL, US Open Cup, and MLS as well. But Serie A, the Eredivisie, and a League One and League Two playoffs. Now, we would always see the Championship playoffs back in the day on BN, but they would only sporadically show matches from League One and League Two. But I was able to sit and watch Forest Green and Tranmere, both legs. I was able to sit and watch the first leg of Pompey Sunderland. So that's something and if I had had the time, I probably could have watched Charlton and Doncaster as well. So that's pretty remarkable. I watched two Eredivisie matches this week. I never could have watched that league before. And obviously Serie A, not only on ESPN Plus, but they had a game on ESPN this week, which was quite significant with Mark Donaldson and Matteo Bonetti going out there. I mean, just amazing week for football.
Well, that's the thing about ESPN Plus is that actually this week, I think in Sport Business, a publication that you write for too, that you have written extensively for, is there was a article, I think it was actually an interview that Eric Fisher did, the editor, and it was talking about ESPN Plus and interviewing somebody, one of the executives at ESPN Plus, and they are still actively, aggressively searching for more soccer rights to acquire, because in some ways it's almost like a gateway drug too. You know what I mean? Soccer fans are diehard, passionate people. And what they did hint at was they said, okay, we're looking at, we don't have as much content from Latin America or Central America or from Mexico. So that's kind of where they're looking to focus on maybe next. On the European side, there aren't that many rights available other than La Liga, which will be up a year from now, as well as Bundesliga. But it looks like ESPN Plus is not stopping acquiring rights. They got a ton already, and it looks like they're going to get more and more.
Well, and I don't know, again, if it's just my television or my iPad or what it is. But and I'll put this to the test again on Saturday, because I'm actually traveling with the Miami FC team up to Orlando for a match up there. So I will not see the FA Cup final or the final day of the Bundesliga on my television. I'll be watching it streaming, and obviously Bundesliga is on Fox, so we can test that as well. But for whatever reason, the production levels, Chris, and I know I've mentioned this before, of the matches from the Football League seem to be, at least for me, as crisp, if not crisper, than the Premier League. And I don't know that that's the case for everyone, but the color seems to be better. The cuts seem to be just as good. Obviously, there are other drop-offs in the presentation, but it's just like the production level itself, the pictures, I think, are as good, if not better.
Well, it's interesting, too. I mean, just as one example, so I agree with you. The ESPN Plus, the quality of the stream is really is HD. It's fantastic. I mean, a lot of that is from BAMTech, which Disney acquired. BAMTech is really the number one streaming platform in terms of the back end. The technology that's being used to actually stream content, whether it's HBO Go or Major League Baseball, which is where they came from originally, or ESPN Plus. But one example is BR Live. So I've been watching BR Live, of course, this season quite a bit, a lot of the Europa League games, etc. But the streaming quality on there is almost, it looks like SD. It's like standard definition. It is not, it's nowhere near as good as the ESPN Plus. Now, going back to the ESPN Plus just for a split second here about the FA Cup final this weekend, one of the criticisms has been is that there's no, very little pre-game, halftime, and post-match content. And it looks like for the FA Cup final, they are going to make more of a conscious effort. I think on the Friday night on the ESPN FC show, they're going to have Dan Thomas and Shaka, Steve Nicol, Craig Burley, as well as Alexis Nunes doing an FA Cup kind of preview special. And then they're going to have some content on Twitter where they'll have Nunes and Burley. I got to host their ESPN's first live Twitter show from the pitch at Wembley Stadium Saturday at 11 a.m. Eastern. And they're going to do 30 minutes there. And I guess we'll have to wait and see if there's any halftime. But there'll definitely be post-match coverage on ESPN FC for sure. Maybe ESPN Plus. We'll have to wait and see. But at least they're making more of an effort there. All right, Kartik, so from this past week, some of the things I caught, I didn't catch as much soccer as I would normally. It's been a crazy week here at the Harris household. But one of the things I was really impressed with was the championship, just in terms of the sheer ecstasy and excitement. I mean, these games were, back and forth, goals galore. The Leeds derby second leg on Wednesday. I'm going into the first 20 minutes thinking, okay, this is Leeds. Leeds are going to win this one. You can just tell they have the momentum. They're moving forward. They're looking good. They have the home crowd, which was a great atmosphere at Elland Road. And then Derby comes back, and then all of a sudden it's Derby hitting them back, and Derby going through. But this game was kind of an example of just this year. The sheer brilliance, really. I mean, just the excitement level, how open the championship is. Not even just the playoffs, but just the league itself. I've watched the championship this season more than I've ever done, and I love it. I mean, it's really entertaining stuff. I think you would agree, Kartik.
Yeah, that's ESPN Plus, obviously. That's given us the exposure to the championship, and I've watched so much of it this season. At times, watched more of it than the Premier League, although toward the end of the season, it was more Premier League than championship. Yeah, I agree. I just have to say, I thought Derby played terrible football over the two legs. They were giving the ball away. They were playing long ball. I really felt like Villa, Dean Smith's a great manager. Villa played good football. West Brom tried at times to play good football, but they were handcuffed by sending offs and not having Hal Robson-Kanu through suspension. Dwight Gale got sent off in the first leg. Chris Brunt got sent off in the second leg. Leeds tried to play football. They always do under Bielsa. I'm disappointed Derby went through, not only because I want to see Leeds back up in the Premier League, now I want to see Villa back up in the Premier League, but because I just feel like of those four teams, they were playing very kind of traditional English-style tactics that people decry. And Frank Lampard may turn out to be a great manager down the road, and maybe it's due to personnel, but I just did not like what I saw from them in these two legs, and quite honestly did not like what I saw from them toward the end of the season. But, you know, goals change games, Chris. I think the most important thing in this game was the defensive error right before halftime. Leeds goes into the dressing room, shell-shocked, and then Derby comes right out after the kickoff and scores. In fact, I was watching it in the Miami FC office yesterday, and Darren McCartney, VP of Operations, who I work with at the NASL, big Liverpool fan, but, you know, like me, has wanted to see Leeds back in the top division as long as I've known him, 10 years. Mm-hmm. I was watching the game with him. He goes, gets a drink, comes back after halftime, you know, thinking that's the end of halftime and Derby had already scored. And he's like, I'm not going to watch this anymore. That's that. And we kind of knew at that point that was it.
Yeah, it was entertaining, at least for the spectator, for the viewer on that one. Now, the Championship Sunday, it never fails. Almost every single Championship Sunday, so the last day of the Premier League season, almost always seems to fall on Mother's Day. So for me,
always.
I know. It's just the worst timing. So in terms of Mother's Day commitments, in terms of, usually my wife is kind of number one, especially on Mother's Day, but other days too, maybe. We'll see. But anyway, as well as my mother, of course. So I didn't get a chance to watch as much Championship Sunday coverage as I normally would. The two-hour pregame, I missed most of that, I believe. But then I tuned in and was able to watch the Liverpool-Wolves game and Man City-Brighton game. The one thing that left me from this coverage was, and I thought this is a little bit strange, is at the end of the game, so at the final whistle, in the second half, it's done and dusted, but we're continuing to watch the programming. And as soon as the final whistle goes, it goes split screen. And I'm okay with going split screen and showing, okay, Anfield, you mean Jurgen Klopp kind of applauding the crowd and the players at Liverpool. A little bit dejected for sure, as well. And then the split screen with the Man City players at Brighton, I mean, just ecstatic, and Vincent Kompany just going crazy, etc. But then the split screen seemed to last for like 5 minutes or so. They kept on going. I'm on the Liverpool side at Anfield. I'm like, okay, we can probably get rid of that split screen now because it's really not anything of value that they're showing. It's just, I don't know, it was strange. Mm-hmm. I mean, the thinking I'm thinking is that they wanted to hold on to have the split screens just to hold on for the Liverpool supporters so they didn't leave in droves, just to kind of keep those viewers hooked. But it was strange because I thought, as soon as they win, go to Anfield for maybe a minute, maybe 30 seconds, and then just give me the full screen of Manchester City, the trophy celebration and the lap of honour and all those things. It was strange. Did you see the same thing, Kartik?
Yeah, I did. And I also noticed at the beginning of the second half, Arlo White talking over You Never Walk Alone. You had complimented Stu Holden a week or two earlier for asking the TNT crew to be quiet during, and that was pregame, but this was at the beginning of the second half. But I found that to be kind of odd. I thought the split screen was... I noticed that too, that it went on for 3 or 4 minutes, maybe not quite 5 minutes, but it was a while. And I also think that Clive Tilsley was just off the charts good in the way he presented the lead up to the Man City Palace match when they went to him and Lee Dixon, and then the trophy ceremony. He was just it was good to see him with NBC doing this the last 6 weeks or so of the season. It's kind of stunning to me again because we've talked so much about 1999, right, and Manchester United and the treble, and he was the voice of that treble, right, because he was calling that match for ITV, at least for audiences in the UK, that he had never called a Premier League match until he got the phone call from NBC to call matches for the US audience. It's still pretty stunning to me, but he was fantastic.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, though, too. I mean, based on the programming decision that NBC made on that Monday, where after Man City had beaten Leicester in that game, and then we found out right then that the big game was going to be on Liverpool on NBC was going to be Liverpool Wolves, and then NBCSN was going to be Brighton against Man City. Anytime I've brought up the name Arlo White to PM Musa, he was a fantastic executive producer, but he's gotten very defensive, always kind of stating, okay, just for the record, just to let you know, Arlo White is still the number one lead announcer and will continue to be so, which I completely understand and I have no issues with. But from this match, from Championship Sunday, I mean, the focal point was Clive Tilsley because, once we knew for sure that, Man City was going to win it, it was all Clive Tilsley, in terms of his voice, his commentary post-match. It was him talking over the scenes that we're seeing. It wasn't Arlo White. Arlo White's at Anfield, and the Anfield crew pretty much, turned off the mics, and they're done. And I thought that was a bit strange, really, because, if you're Arlo White, you want your voice to be the one that everyone remembers on that Championship Sunday, on that final day. They were really banking on Liverpool causing an upset, or Brighton causing an upset. And it's easy to be a Monday morning quarterback and kind of in hindsight looking back at the decision. But then again, though, Liverpool against Wolves is going to generate higher TV ratings than Brighton against Man City, even though the Brighton-Man City game has more relevance. There's just not as many Man City supporters in the United States. So it's definitely a decision that plays into TV ratings. But if I'm Arlo White, I'm thinking like, man, I should have just been at the Amex Stadium and being the lead commentator. Let's put Clive Tilsley at Anfield.
Right, but if Liverpool does happen to win the title, Arlo White's at Anfield, and it's a bigger story than Man City winning the title. Who knows? Man City might still – Liverpool might still win this title. Let's see if Man City gets dock points if they engage in third-party ownership.
Wait. Is that possible?
I don't know. No one said it's possible, but I do think if the New York Times report is accurate, the Premier League has to look into it. Obviously, financial fair play, the Etihad deal, which I've said for a year, is I believe is cooked just based on – knowing the Etihad situation. That's one thing. But the third-party ownership piece, we saw what happened to West Ham. Now, they didn't get dock points, but I think 12 years later, everyone is saying, how did they not get dock points? Why did Sheffield United get relegated that season? So let's see. I mean, it's unlikely. Maybe Man City gets dock points to start the next season, next year. But it's still possible, I guess.
Yeah, well, that would be huge, Kartik. That would be, I mean, that would be probably the biggest thing that's ever happened in Premier League football in terms of a news story where, you mean, a team gets docked points and gets the title taken away from them. I find that very unlikely. I mean, it's definitely...
Yeah, it's unlikely. If they get docked points, it'll be next season.
Yeah. And even that, I mean, even that's probably unlikely too. I mean, to me, it's kind of, it seems to be more of a kind of definitely pushed on the UEFA side, where UEFA is going to be the one to come down and make their decision. And I can see the Premier League kind of just carefully and quietly kind of sidestepping that one and just even moving on and pretending that nothing ever happened. And maybe saying something kind of dismissive or something. But yeah, that would rock the world, definitely the football world.
The thing that was interesting also, Chris, was that NBC decided to stay with the coverage on NBC over the air for Goal Zone, which they've done on previous Championship Sundays. But then the Premier League download, which was the 99 documentary, which they've now shown four or five times, which features obviously Steve Bauer heavily, who contributes for NBC's coverage and was the host of Man U TV at the Manchester United TV at the time, etc. But that was a good 3-hour block of programming after the match ended, after Liverpool Wolves ended, and they had a 2-hour block before the matches kicked off. So all told, I'm trying to count, that's 7 hours of programming over the air on NBC. That's a commitment level to soccer we have never seen from an American network outside of World Cups, maybe World Cups and Women's World Cups. It was pretty remarkable.
Yeah, the only other thing I can think of really that's come close to that, and it's not as good as that, is when they've had, and this is going back a few years now, when NBC had a couple of the documentaries that they put on. So they had the Swansea City documentary, I think they had a Crystal Palace documentary, and they put that on over-the-air television, which was a huge deal. Here's an hour to 2 hours of a soccer documentary right after a 12:30 to 2:30 match, which whoever it was a few years ago, that's definitely a big deal there. But yeah, no, you're right, Kartik. That's a huge commitment, especially on over-the-air television, where it's prime time advertising dollars.
And this coincided. Sorry, Chris, but just really want to get this in. This interestingly coincided with Fox having a two matches on Big Fox, one Bundesliga match, one MLS match this weekend, and then ESPN sending their crew to, I think I may have mentioned this earlier, to Rome, and showing a match on big ESPN in Serie A, the Roma-Juventus match. Juventus was wearing horrid kits. I don't know what those were, some specialty kits. But
it's the new home kit.
You're kidding.
No.
They're going to be wearing...
Yeah.
Yep. Oh, gosh. But, okay, so I'll just have to get used to those. But for whatever reason, this week seems to have been the high watermark for soccer, either over the air or on big ESPN, which is, you know, in so many homes and so much in all the sports bars, etc., usually the default channel, that it's almost like an over the air channel in some ways. Really a remarkable weekend when you think about that, coming after a week where soccer entered the consciousness of American casual sports fans because of the Champions League and what happened in the Champions League. And your article yesterday reflects the television ratings. Univision is blown away all kinds of records for ratings in this country. And then TNT, I know we're going to get to this in a minute. TNT, even though they're behind Univision, is doing substantially better than FS1 did. Mm-hmm.
So with that, though, Kartik, with over-the-air television and soccer being more accessible, there does come risks. There does come issues. And I think you witnessed it this past weekend. I missed the game, but you witnessed it with the Bundesliga.
Yeah, so I should have expected it. I get up, I'm fired up. You know, Dortmund's playing on FS1. Bayern is on Fox over the air. And I turn on the Dortmund game first. So it's great, you know, and they have a proper pregame show. Fox, I'm like, okay, this is what we complain about every week on the show, right? They're inconsistent. This is one of the better weeks. Match kicks off. Dortmund match kicks off. I switch to Channel 7, and they're showing paid ads. It's like, oh my gosh, this is Leipzig. Infomercials. First place Bayern trying to hold off a charge from Dortmund, and third place Leipzig, who had a title shot until the previous week, until they had drawn the previous week. But one of the feature Bundesliga matches of the year, not just because of title implications, just it's Bayern versus Leipzig at Leipzig, not on. So ended up having to watch Dortmund and Fortuna straight through, which was fine. But it's up to local affiliates to preempt programming, which is what we saw. Now, they did show the Atlanta-Orlando game the next day, which was on a during the day, right, a 2 p.m. match. They did show that, but they didn't show this. And I this weekend, as I said, I'm on the bus with Miami FC going up to Orlando, so I don't know if they're going to show Eintracht and Bayern, which is the assigned big Fox match and a huge match, not only for Bayern winning the title, but Eintracht, who have stumbled. I think Europa League really took a chunk out of them. They need 3 points and some help to get into Champions League. So it's a huge, huge match.
And that's the thing, though, too, is that this weekend's games, so the final day of the Bundesliga season, coming down to the very last day, the games, the Bayern game against RB Leipzig, I believe it is. But anyway, the Bayern Munich game is on Big Fox, and then the Dortmund game is on FS1 again, so Saturday. So hopefully for WSVN viewers in Miami, as well as other places, too, the other affiliates, too, is that these games will be shown and they won't be running infomercials. Now, Kartik, before we move on to the TV news section, what about the Dortmund Dusseldorf game? I didn't see this. I saw you post it on Twitter, but I wanted to give you an opportunity to kind of paint the scene in terms of a couple of minutes of really sensational television coverage.
Yeah, so this is something, and again, we don't want to beat up on MLS constantly on the show. I have said that there are players have to make individual decisions. There are some American players who are better off staying in Major League Soccer than going to Europe. They're just better equipped, whether it's psychologically or mentally, or maybe even getting the most out of their game staying in the U.S. So I'm not trying to paint a broad picture of everybody. But when Christian Pulisic got subbed off, Lucien Favre, realizing it's his last match, at home, Dortmund typically have the second biggest crowds in Europe, right behind Barcelona, 81,000. It was pretty amazing. I've never seen an American get this reception before at a huge European club. He gets subbed off last time at home. Entire stadium rises. Standing ovation. Gave me goosebumps as an American watching this for an American player. And I know I tweeted at that moment, this is a sort of adulation, those guys who stay in MLS, those who want to be, who want to understand what it's like, the culture of football, they'll never feel. And I didn't mean this as a shot at Landon Donovan specifically, which some people took it as, although maybe I was thinking about him specifically, who knows, when I tweeted it, or any other specific American player, Jordan Morris, whoever else. But it was, as an American, just almost brought tears to my eyes. And the appreciation that crowd had for Pulisic, who at the age of 20 has won, is the most decorated Bundesliga player outside of Julian Draxler and Thomas Müller at that age, which is pretty elite company, says a lot. And it was just amazing. As an American, I don't know how it could not bring goosebumps to you. But again, I didn't mean it as a shot completely at MLS. But if you're an elite player, you'll never quite get that feeling if you don't try and test yourself on the big stage, like going to a Borussia Dortmund or a club of that size.
All right, Kartik, so let's move on to TV streaming news.
Yeah, it was a big weekend for NBC, or Big Championship Sunday. A record 2.2 million watched the Premier League season finale across NBC Sports various networks. That obviously included a huge number for Liverpool Wolves, but also some surprising numbers for matches on USA and Sci-Fi, featuring Manchester United and Spurs.
Yeah, definitely big numbers there. I mean, it helped definitely that the Premier League season went down to the final day and a lot on the line, especially with Liverpool and Man City. Of course, the relegation battle was wrapped up, and the positions for the top four looked pretty solidified going into that final day. But still, great numbers. And overall, for the entire season, for the 2018-2019 Premier League season, the viewing figures were up 2% compared to the year before. So that's a positive. All in all, I think, I mean, we definitely had some complaints about the Premier League coverage. Actually, more so about the Premier League itself, as well as some of the Premier League coverage on NBCSN. But overall, I think they're still raising the bar season after season. That was one of the questions I had for Pierre Moussa in the podcast interview that we did last week, is, you mean, how much further can that bar be raised? And they always find ways to do it. So they're on the right course. I think they're doing well, and the numbers show that. Now, speaking of numbers, we had some big numbers too. This is from Univision Deportes and TNT. Of course, Univision Deportes, who will be changing their name this summer to Tu Duene, which is the correct Spanish pronunciation, making it even more difficult for Anglo-English speakers to figure out how to pronounce their network. But Univision Deportes, some huge numbers. I mean, for example, the semi-final. Actually, well, the coverage to date has been the biggest, most watched Spanish-language coverage of the Champions League ever. Some massive numbers for the semi-final rounds, of course, with Liverpool, Barcelona, and Spurs and Ajax. On the TNT side, too, they broke records. Their viewership is up, way up compared to what Fox had last season, as well as in previous years. So the very watchable pre-match coverage by TNT of the UEFA Champions League, I mean, 1 hour pre-game show. They've stuck to the game plan, and they've done the 1 hour all season long. Has done well for them. I mean, the viewership for those telecasts are up 91% compared to last year's coverage, pre-match coverage, for through to the UEFA Champions League finals on Fox. The other stat that's really impressive is that the viewership among women is up 96% on TNT compared to Fox and FS1, and that's a great sign. Obviously, more people tuning into the TNT side of things and being more of a mainstream audience rather than a very maybe male-centric sports channel. So yeah, everything's looking good there.
Yeah, the demographics of TNT and FS1 couldn't be more different, actually, for their normal viewership. I don't want to get too deep down this rabbit hole, but it's no surprise that female viewership is up on TNT. Moving on, Chris, MLS, and this is kind of that flew under the radar with all this football news this week, has launched their first league channel on Pluto TV, which is a free streaming service which more and more people are using. And this this free TV channel will be this free MLS channel on Pluto TV will be a 24-hour channel. It will not carry replays, condensed matches, I understand. Classic matches, including the MLS Cup from last year, the Atlanta-Portland match. Studio analysis and a lot of documentary programs and a lot of MLS's good programs, good documentary programs that have just been digital only to this point. So pretty exciting. Now, MLS used to have a channel on Roku and on Apple TV, et cetera, that got folded into MLS Live. And folded into MLS Live, then into ESPN Plus, which in that process, we lost a lot of access to these sort of features outside of straight digital using your laptop or iPad type stuff. So this is actually me personally, because MLS did a great job with that stuff a few years ago, and it was accessible and available, and it's become less so over the course of the last few years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely a smart move by Major League Soccer to make their content more accessible. The only issue I have with this is not with MLS, but it's with Pluto. I mean, Pluto TV is a cord-cutting, you mean, streaming platform. You can watch a ton of content, and I've been trying to watch stuff on it for the last couple of years, but I can never find anything of value. It's usually some really cheap content, just nothing of value. And maybe this will help in terms of Major League Soccer having some of the content on that streaming service and making it more valuable in terms of having some content on there to watch. Again, for other people that might love Pluto TV and find some great programming on there, for me personally, even though they've got a ton of channels for free, I just can never find anything. So maybe this will help out. One more news item, and this is a big one, Kartik.
Yeah, so NPSL this week has signed an agreement which gives MyCujo TV, who's broadcast a lot of NPSL games, broadcast a lot of just soccer matches from across the world. They are a soccer-only platform. Preferred rights in terms of being the preferred vendor to stream and broadcast matches. This is for the entire NPSL, 90 some odd teams across the country, which is in play right now. I am actually part of a broadcast team for Miami FC. We're in that league that uses the MyCujo platform. So big news for a platform that shows matches from around the world. Of course, they're based in the Netherlands and has been a great boon to football fans. And actually, their quality has gotten much better. And one thing, since we've talked a lot about ESPN Plus on this episode, I want to mention MyCujo has the ability, they mark goals, they mark significant incidents in matches when you go back and watch an archive stream. That's one thing that ESPN Plus is missing, mm-hmm. that MyCujo and other streaming services have. And I've gotten so much feedback about that, just relative to UPSL matches here in South Florida. They have a bunch of UPSL teams in your neighborhood in Palm Beach County, Chris, and then NPSL matches, is that the ability to go and see the goals quickly or the red card incident quickly is one reason people really like that platform.
Yeah, that's a really cool feature. All right, let's move on to TV ratings, and we will have all of the numbers from this past week at worldsoccertalk.com in the next 24 to 48 hours. But some of the numbers that jumped out, Kartik, in the first segment, you talked about a lot of the games on over-the-air television. Well, Liverpool against Wolves had 854,000 viewers watching that game on NBC on Sunday. Of course, at the same time, there were 9 other games going on in the Premier League. We don't have all those numbers right now, but we will have them soon. But some of the other Premier League numbers from that day, 443,000 people watched the Brighton-Man City game. And looking down at some of the other numbers too, you got Man United against Cardiff, 143,000 people watched that on USA. And then Everton Spurs on Sci-Fi, 142,000 viewers. The U.S. Women's National Team friendly against South Africa on Fox on Sunday, 705,000 viewers on that one. So that's good news. People are tuning in. They're interested in the U.S. Women's National Team, as they should be. And hopefully that will continue to rise as we get closer to the Women's World Cup. And Atlanta against Orlando on Fox on Sunday, which is the match before the U.S. Women's National Team game. That one had 395,000 viewers. Decent there. RB Leipzig against Bayern. This is the game from last weekend. 348,000 viewers on Fox. Speaking of the Bundesliga, Dortmund against Dusseldorf on FS1, 105,000 viewers. And last but not least, Roma against Juventus on ESPN on Sunday. The game that you mentioned, that Mark Donaldson and Matteo Bonetti were at the stadium commentating, 246,000 viewers for that one, which is probably, I'm pretty sure, the best Serie A viewing number for the week.
Yeah, Chris, those numbers, the U.S. women's number was remarkable. I missed that match and had forgotten that was on Big Fox, quite frankly, so I didn't mean to slight that because obviously, as listeners of this podcast know, I watch a lot of women's football. It was just a crazy week. Roma-Juventus, the number for this match, as well as Dortmund-Dusseldorf, even with another Bundesliga match being on Big Fox at the same time, the numbers for those matches being where they are, I think, is a real warning sign for La Liga. Not that La Liga doesn't know this already, but they've got to get off BN. As much as we love BN's coverage, 246 for a Serie A match that Juventus has already won the title. Roma might get the fourth. They may not. It's a warning sign because it's you see through the course of this season, even though Bundesliga numbers are still low, they're improving. You see Serie A numbers, even though they're still low, improving. You see the platforms those two leagues are currently on in this country, elevating the number of people who are at least engaged in watching those leagues. And the La Liga numbers are flat, if not down, because of the lack of accessibility of BN. So I think that this will be noted at La Liga headquarters.
Yeah, it reminds me of how when the Bundesliga was on Goal TV and they were behind the eight ball, they didn't have the distribution that the Premier League and other leagues had. and they were late to the game. I mean, in terms of getting onto Fox and then having greater distribution, or at least the opportunity to have greater viewing numbers. And La Liga's in that same spot right now where they're behind the eight ball. They're on a network that does good coverage but does not have the distribution because of the deals falling through with DirecTV and Comcast. And they have to come out big and bold in this next deal. And we'll probably do a whole podcast maybe next week on that as far as where they should go. But yeah, absolutely, Kartik, 100%. And I'm sure La Liga already knows that, but it's always good to reiterate that point. Now, moving on to listener mailbag. First up is Aram Gumusyan, and he says, you and Kartik know your football, so I'd love to hear your thoughts on two-legged ties versus single elimination games. The second legs of the Champions League semifinals were insane, and then this week, the second legs of West Brom against Aston Villa and Leeds against Derby were packed with wild end-to-end action. There's something special about the second leg of a two-legged tie. MLS has gotten rid of two-legged ties for the playoffs this year. Is it the right move?
Yes and no. Okay, I think the two-legged ties are better. The reason why I think eliminating it is good for MLS is because if they insist on having regular season and playoffs, the regular season has had little value because the two-leg ties, what we've seen happen at MLS, because there's so much competitive balance in that league, is that the team that gets the first leg tends to win the two-leg tie. The team that gets the first leg at home, I should say. And that's the lower-seeded team. So at least in this format, I guess the higher-seeded team gets an advantage for playing better in the having a better points total in the regular season, I suppose. Yeah, I like the excitement of two-leg ties. Champions League and the championship playoffs have shown us that, and we'll have a relegation playoff soon in Germany that will demonstrate that to us again, which Stuttgart will be in. But it's the devaluing of the MLS regular season that I thought maybe if you go to a single leg, Chris, perhaps you add more value to the regular season. Now, I don't know if that's happening or not. We won't know till the end of this season. But the MLS regular season still seems very uneven. Atlanta United, for all the talk that DeBoer should get the sack and how terrible they are, I think they might be close to being top of the Eastern Conference again because they've gone on a run, and now yep. I think they won five straight league matches, and they're right back up there. So, I don't know.
Yeah, my thinking on this is that I love two-legged ties, but for Major League Soccer right now, I think the one tie, the knockout game, and that's it, is better. Part of it is because a huge part of it is because of scheduling. So sometimes with the playoffs, and then you have the first leg, and then depending on if there's a FIFA break or there's something happening in between, it could be a couple of weeks before the second leg is played, or sometimes even longer. So the issue to me is more the scheduling and the calendar, and then also coming up against a lot of the American sports, the big sports. I mean, whether it's NFL or college football or just different things going on, a World Series and things are happening, it gets lost in the shuffle. So I think for Major League Soccer right now, it probably makes sense to go with the single game. But if MLS changes their calendar in the future to be more favorable to its competition, more favorable to Major League Soccer and less favorable to the competition, it's probably better to maybe then look at a two-legged tie for the playoffs. Monty Reed comments in terms of a podcast we had a couple of weeks ago talking about the potential of beIN Sports and La Liga leaving beIN Sports. He says, great podcast, but I will disagree with La Liga leaving beIN Sports. Number one, beIN has La Liga in a lot of other markets around the world. Almost every market that beIN is in, they have La Liga. Number two, beIN has shirt contracts with at least one La Liga team. This shows commitment. Number three, beIN's main programming is La Liga. And with the Kinect channels, every La Liga match is on TV to include La Liga TV. Even some of the La Liga 2 games are shown on Kinect channels. Number four, like you said in the podcast when complaining about Fox, beIN has quality pre-game, halftime, and post-game shows and weekly shows. Number five, if Fox gets La Liga, please no, for all the reasons you complain about Fox. Number six, if ESPN gets them, we should expect the same deal as Serie A, one match a week on ESPN2 with the rest of the matches on ESPN+. How is this an upgrade? What about La Liga TV? Number seven, BR Live. Unless matches are played on TNT or TBS, this would not be an upgrade. Number eight, DAZN, not an upgrade at this time. Number nine, Univision maybe, but what about the English language? Late La Liga games and early Liga MX games will conflict at times. Number 10, NBC, direct competition of the EPL, could reopen a lawsuit with Comcast and be in. Number 11, La Liga's own streaming platform, maybe in the future, but not right now. Cost is too high when networks are willing to pay millions for the rights. And Monty, all of these are good points. And really what I'm saying in terms of what I said a couple of weeks ago on the podcast is that I believe that even if beIN Sports came in and gave a higher offer to La Liga in terms of the monetary value for to renew the rights to La Liga, I believe that La Liga would say, thanks, but no thanks. But we need to go with somebody with a greater distribution that has access to free-to-air television. Imagine a Barcelona-Real Madrid game on a Saturday afternoon on ABC or CBS or Fox or NBC or some of these over-the-air channels. That would be massive. They don't have that right now. And for all the great things that beIN has done for La Liga and for the coverage and everything that they do, you mean behind the scenes and on-air, pre-match, halftime, the commitment that they've shown, I'm talking about specifically the U.S. market. In the U.S. market, it makes sense for La Liga to leave beIN Sports once the contract is up. And yes, they have great deals overseas, and they have, they have short contracts. They have all these different things happening. I just feel for La Liga, it's best to leave beIN Sports when the time is right, which is going to be in the next 12 months.
Yeah, and as in terms of the Univision thing, that's a great point that it'll conflict with Liga MX matches. Now, I think though there might be a workaround on that if Univision gets the rights in terms of Unimas or Univision Deportes or the rebranded network. Sorry, but that this question is, I think, not an open one with La Liga. I think they are going to get off beIN in this country. It's a matter of where they go and yep. Which of those other options Monty has listed they choose to exercise. They've retained Relevant Sports in a venture of La Liga USA. We've talked to our La Liga Americas that we've talked about previously on this show. And I think they'll make a strategic decision, not just a decision based on who gives them the biggest money in terms of rights, because I think they're now realizing that there is an opportunity cost. If you go to a network that may fork over more for rights, but their distribution isn't quite at the level of others. And the danger signs are there with Serie A on ESPN and who knows what happens with the Bundesliga after this contract, but as of now, they're on Fox. So La Liga is sitting fourth among the European leagues in the United States in terms of visibility and distribution, when in fact it should be second. Let's be honest about it. Yeah, so,
Or it could be argued they should be first.
They could be first, right? Second at the least. Yeah. Second at worst, first perhaps, but right there with the Premier League. Yeah. So this is a critical time for them, and I love beIN. I love beIN's coverage. Chris, you and I are friendly with a lot of the talent at beIN, but I don't see any way they stay on beIN.
Yeah.
Quite honest.
Yeah.
I think it's a done.
Yeah, so let's save that one for a more detailed, in-depth discussion for next week's podcast, where we'll discuss our thoughts about where La Liga should go to, and the Bundesliga too, because there's a lot of the same issues that we have with the distribution of La Liga. There's a lot of issues overlapping with the Bundesliga, and both the rights for both of those leagues are coming up for renewal at the same exact time, which is at the end of the 2019-2020 season. So 12 months from now, we'll know for sure where those leagues are going. Rico Richardson said on Twitter a couple of weeks ago, we missed this on last week's pod, but I don't see how relegation games will translate to an American TV audience, and especially for Major League Soccer. Even if a promotion relegation happens, you still need playoffs to decide a champion. Now, this is something that I just don't get, Kartik. And this is something that, I mean, I'm not wrapped into traditional American sports culture where it's, baseball playoffs, it's NBA playoffs, it's NFL playoffs, where playoffs are a massive deal. And for me, personally, I'd rather have relevance to a regular season where, the table doesn't lie. whoever finishes first, I mean, and we saw with Man City against Liverpool right down to the very wire how absorbing that race was for those two teams. I mean, two of the probably best performing teams we've seen competing in a Premier League for quite some time in terms of that at that high level. The rest of the league, maybe not so much. But in terms of the playoffs, I just don't get how people believe that that's the only way that you need to decide a champion. Am I wrong with this?
No, you're not wrong. In fact, I'm having more and more qualms with the Champions League. I know this is sacrilege a week after the beauty of the Champions League, because when I evaluate Real Madrid winning three Champions Leagues in a row at a time when their status at 4 out of 5, at a time when their status was slipping even domestically, and they were only really contending for a title one of those years, of those five, of those 4 years that they won the Champions League, you begin to realize that the nature of knockout competitions creates more random results, or the ability for one player, in this case Cristiano Ronaldo, to take over matches and exert his will to get his team to lift a trophy. Now, that might be a great viewing spectacle. Okay, I get that about playoffs. I get that about Champions League. Does it create the most worthy champion? No. The most worthy champion is awarded if you have a balanced schedule. You have a 9-month season. Again, we have a 9-month season in European football, not a 4-month season like these American sports. You are competing in a global marketplace, so you have to play for 9 months in order to keep your players at an optimum level for international competition and for those European competitions, continental competitions. And the only way to determine a champion is balanced schedule and who has the most points. It's the fairest way. It's a worthy champion. You could have a playoff now. Liverpool could be the 2 seed. They could play Wolves, the 7 seed. Wolves eliminated them, remember, from the FA Cup, right? Mm-hmm. And they could be eliminated.
Right.
Think about that.
Yep.
And then Wolves could go on and win the Premier League title. Now, that might be exciting for some fans, but I don't think it provides you a worthy champion. This is the issue with Major League Soccer. I mean, the champions have been pretty random. I talk about the New York Red Bulls with a lot of fondness and say they're the one team, to me, now Atlanta has done it to a certain extent, but that have created a structure, created a style of play, have developed really good young players, Tyler Adams being the standout of that group, had a philosophy. Jesse Marsh had such a good philosophy, passing ball control football, pressing high, winning the ball back, that he's gotten now a head coaching job in Europe. Yet people will point out to me, well, they've never won anything. I'm like, what are you talking about? They've won 3 or 4 supporters shields. They've had the best record of the – oh, no, but they never win in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And that's ridiculous. The fact that even the narrative about one team in MLS, the one team I put on kind of a pedestal, I respect them the most for their body of work over the last decade, is shot at because of random results in playoffs, where they were always the higher seed, by the way, and got eliminated by lower seeded teams, including last season by Atlanta, to me just makes the playoffs ridiculous. If you actually want to award worthy champions and have worthy discussions. Now, if you just want entertainment and randomness and oh, we never know what's going to happen, then yeah, playoffs are cool. And that's why I guess the Champions League has the fans it does.
It would be different if the TV ratings for the Major League Soccer playoffs were amazing. If those numbers were through the roof, they're like, oh my gosh, these ratings are huge. We've got 600,000 people watching this game and 500,000 watching this and whatever the numbers would be. If that was the case, I could say that Major League Soccer and American soccer fans would have a case to make and say, well, the playoffs are the time when everyone tunes in, they're getting excited, and they're watching these games in huge numbers. The opposite is true. The numbers for the playoffs are just as poor, if not poorer, in some cases, in many cases, than the regular season. And the regular season, for the most part, the average soccer fan in the United States is not tuning in to watch the regular season of Major League Soccer. They might tune in now and again when it's convenient, but they're not watching it religiously. They're not hanging on to every game or every weekend or watching those games religiously from March until August. And then next season is going to start in February, even sooner. It's going to start mid-February all the way to August. They're not doing that. So, to me, I do not understand the whole concept of playoffs. It is Russian roulette. It is one of those. It can be exciting. But the numbers show that people are not interested in that. So so going back to Rico Richardson's comment about that you need to have playoffs to decide a champion, I don't know, to me, stick with baseball, stick with NBA, stick with the NFL, stick with college football, and maybe that's the way to go, because in soccer it doesn't make any sense when you have such a long season with meaningful games.
I mean, college football was a sport that didn't have playoffs until 4 years ago, or 5 years ago, sorry, 2014 was the first playoff. It fundamentally changed the way the sport was viewed, but it was a push to push playoffs in that sport. I look back and I don't know. Maybe they never should have introduced the playoffs. I mean, college football, and Chris, you've heard me make it discuss for many times over the years. College football was the sport more similar to European football in terms of, you know, the American sport, in terms of fans, in terms of the setup. And it was, they even rejected playoffs for years and years and years. There are various reasons for that, but I don't want to get into on this show. I just think now there's more controversy about what happens in the playoffs, who didn't get into the playoffs. Is that number one team really the best team? You know, it gives you great spectacles, and the television ratings have been great for the college football playoffs, just out of sight. But I think 10 or 15 years from now, there'll be a lot of people who are college football traditionalists, somewhat like me, who will say, yeah, maybe it was better when we just determined the champion through the bowl system.
All right, next up is RCA88, and he says, there is no such word as end line in soccer. There is no verb in soccer to go end line. Persisting with this made-up, non-appropriate terms such as end line and on frame are reasons why it is difficult to watch or listen to Major League Soccer. What can be done to raise this issue with Fox Soccer? It ruined the last Men's World Cup. With the Women's World Cup coming up, I feel like I need to mute the TV or watch the Spanish language channel. Now, this doesn't bother me as much as probably it bothers some listeners and viewers. But it's something that's definitely an American language when it comes to commentating soccer. And there's a lot of American phrases. I mean, just this past week, I mean, this is not on television, but just this past week, I was watching an AYSO game, and I heard the coach screaming, like, run to the 50-yard line. I'm like, what? A halfway line? Come on. But I mean, whether it's, I mean, Taylor Twellman is probably somebody that's talking about, like, hit the upper 90, or it's on frame, or even a lot of American expressions. I'm okay with it personally because it kind of blends some of the common phrases that we know from American sports with the American language into soccer. But I can see why it would bother people. And going back to RCA88's question about what can be done to raise this issue with Fox Soccer, to be honest with you, they're tone deaf. It's like talking to a brick wall. You're not going to get any feedback. You're not going to get any, I mean, reasons why things are done the way they are done. I did find something really illuminating this week, Kartik, and I think in many ways we shouldn't be surprised by this, but I got confirmation from one of my sources, and I mentioned about how Fox, you know, usually goes very U.S.-centric with their commentators and with their talent. They're very focused on having American voices. And the person mentioned that a previous executive at Fox Sports, his mantra was for soccer, is that soccer fans, well, Americans are not going to accept or watch soccer if the actual game itself doesn't have an American voice. It has to have an American voice in order for people to accept soccer and to watch soccer. And we've seen from ESPN to NBC, to me, it, at the end of the day, whatever talent is available within your budget, get the best talent that's out there. No matter if they're from South America, like Andres Cantor, or from Europe, or from Africa, or from wherever they are, in the United States too. There's some great talent commentators in the United States too. Is acquire the best talent to give the best coverage, rather than say, okay, I'm only going to hire American voices because the only way that soccer is going to become successful in the United States on television, with the mainstream, is we have to have American voices intertwined with this coverage. Otherwise, it's not going to work. Well, that executive at Fox Sports is no longer at Fox Sports. He's moved on to do his own company. But it makes sense, though. I mean, that's the reason why that we've had all of these, other than Warren Barton and maybe Derek Ray, all of these very American-centric voices.
I forgot to mention when we went over the matches. I hope people are still listening to the show now. The best Fox broadcast of an MLS game I've seen for years was an all-female team. So I think it's not just an American thing. I think American males fundamentally call the match in many cases different than we would like. So this team was Jen Hildreth was the commentator. I'm blanking out on who the other people on the broadcast were. Kat Whitehull and the sideline reporter, I'm forgetting, but they were really good, and they knew how to naturally call a match. So you could have American voices using American terminology still calling a match properly. I think for me and for you, Chris, where we've had a problem is where there's American commentators who call the match like they're like a baseball game. Yep. Or a football game, American football game. So I wanted to point that out. I meant to point that out earlier. Actually had it in my notes and forgot about it. But Kansas City, DC United, if you watch that match, I thought the commentary from the females led by Jen Hildreth were much better than you typically get on Fox for an MLS match with an American male calling games. And that's not a shot at John Strong. It was just the whole broadcast flowed better, in my opinion.
And that's something, too. I mean, we've had Dave O'Brien. We've had Gus Johnson. We've seen this attempt to try to figure out, okay, let's take a baseball announcer, Dave O'Brien, and have him do World Cup coverage. And let's take a basketball guy, Gus Johnson, and try and have him do Champions League. It does not work. I mean, it's a completely different language. It's like me doing an NFL game. It'd be a disaster. All right, let's move on. Nick says, I had a few questions regarding some international tournaments taking place this summer. For Copa America 2019, will Soccer Talk announce that ESPN would be broadcasting the matches, but they have yet to make an official announcement? Is there a reason for this, or did the deal fall through? So according to my sources, that still is going to happen, and that is still correct. I'm standing by that. And then hopefully in the next couple of weeks, we'll hear an official announcement. Part of it is the timing. So if you're going to be covering Copa America and you're ESPN and you're going to be announcing this, when is the best time to announce it? It's after the regular seasons are done. And as you get closer to the big event to let people know, there's no point announcing it a couple of months ago when people will forget about it. So I believe it will happen. And this is, do you know if any broadcaster has picked up the rights for the FIFA U20 World Cup? Which that is Telemundo showing the games and Fox Sports are showing the games. So check those schedules. And the UEFA U21 Championship, I believe Univision Deportes is going to be showing some of those games online. But if that's not correct or if you can't find it, just email me and I'll find out for you. And he says, I'd be interested in watching both those tournaments. Thanks for your help. Raymond Orozco, last question. How do you guys feel about a potential Central American Super League that features all of El Salvador, Honduras, and Guatemala, or West Indies Super League made up of teams from the Caribbean? Kartik, no offense to any of these countries, but there's just not the viewership available that would be interested in this. We have the CONCACAF Nations League, which we've seen. Very few people are interested in actually acquiring the rights, and very few people actually interested in watching the games. We've got the Liga MX and MLS Cup. This was to be announced soon. That's the big hope that's going to generate some interest. And if it happens there, I don't think it will trickle down to those other countries. But let's see if Mexico and the United States can do something where it's going to generate a lot more interest.
Yeah, so MLS, the part of the reason MLS has been far more successful in this era than it was 15 years ago, I think, is the number of Central American and Caribbean players in the league. They've done a better job of scouting. They've found a lot of Central American players and Caribbean players who grew up in the United States. And this is filtered down the divisions, USL also, NPSL, et cetera. So I don't even think they have the talent to launch a Super League. I think most of that talent is playing either in the United States league system or scattered in other places. And for the Caribbean, there are a lot of players playing in the lower divisions in England. So I think it's very difficult for them to do that. I think that's just the way it is. When Jamaica beat the United States in the Gold Cup a few years ago, Jamaica actually had more MLS players on their roster than the U.S. and had a goalkeeper in goal that was playing in USL. So I think those countries have just used the U.S. league system, and maybe there was an attempt to launch a Super League to bring players home. I don't think it'll work.
Mm-hmm. Yep, same here. So you can always reach us via email through web at worldsoccertalk.com, as well as facebook.com/worldsoccertalk, and on Twitter at worldsoccertalk. Plus, of course, you can always post your comments on worldsoccertalk.com. We'd love to get your feedback. We got a bunch this week, and we really appreciate it. And any questions or rants and raves or any observations you'd like to make, feel free to let us know, and we'd be lovely to read those out on air. Thank you for listening. You can get a new episode of the World Soccer Talk podcast every Thursday. Every episode is released on SoundCloud, Spotify, YouTube, Stitcher, iTunes, TuneIn, Audioboom, and worldsoccertalk.com. If you like the show, share it with your friends on social media and give us a review. And Kartik, going into another weekend, we've got the Bundesliga title race on Saturday. It's going to be on Fox and FS1, as well as other channels, as well as a bunch of other coverage from around the world. What should they do?
Enjoy your football.